Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 So, today we will try to bewilder you, and you'll see where this goes. Okay. Fifth canto, 16th chapter, 4th verse. Siruvacha Nivai Maharaj Bhagavato Maya Guna Vibhutu Kashtam Manasa Vachasya Vadigantam Alam Vibhudayushapi Purashas Tasmat Pradantant Yenaiva Bhu Goloka Visesham Nam Rupa Nam Lakshanato Vyak. That's a long, long word. Okay, I should try to explain it. Okay. Vyakyashyama. Okay, what we're dealing with here is the fifth canto description of Jambudvip. So, translation. If somebody could get me a glass of water, because I always run out of. Is that yours?
No.
Oh, he's recording? Oh. Hello. The great Rishi Sukadev Goswami said, "My dear king, there is no limit to the expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's material energy. This material energy is a transformation of the material qualities, which are sattva guna, raja guna, tama guna. Yet no one could possibly explain it perfectly, even in a lifetime as long as that of Brahma. No one in the material world is perfect. And an imperfect person could not describe this material world accurately even after continued speculation. O king, I shall nevertheless try to explain to you the principal reasons, such as Bhuloka with their names, forms, measurements, and various symptoms." So, if somebody would like to read the purport.
The material world is only 1/4 of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's creation, but it is unlimited and impossible for anyone to know or describe, even with the qualification of a life as long as that of Brahma, who lives for millions and millions of years. Modern scientists and astronomers try to explain the cosmic situation and the vastness of space, and some of them believe that all the glittering stars are different suns. From Bhagavad Gita, however, we understand that all these stars, nakshatras, are like the moon, in that they reflect the sun's shine. They are not independent luminaries. Bhuloka is explained to be that portion of outer space through which the heat and light of the sun extend. Therefore, it is natural to conclude that this universe extends in space as far as we can see and encompasses the glittering stars. Srila Sukadev Goswami admitted that to give full details of this expansive material universe would be impossible, but nevertheless, he wanted to give the king as much knowledge as he had received through the parampara system. We should conclude that if one cannot comprehend the material expansions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one certainly cannot estimate the expansiveness of the spiritual world. The Brahma Samhita confirms this. Advaita Machyutam Anadim Anantarupam Adhyam Purana Purusham Nava Yovanam Cha. The limits of the expansions of Govinda, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, cannot be estimated by anyone. Even a person as perfect as Brahma, not to speak of tiny scientists whose senses and instruments are all imperfect and who cannot give us information of even this one universe. We should therefore be satisfied with the information obtainable from Vedic sources as spoken by the authorities like Sukadev Goswami.
Thank you. So now, and I will ask Krishna Kripa to help me a little with this class at certain points. Yeah. First, we'll begin with perception. Is perception reality? So let's get some thoughts on this. Yes.
Perception is not full reality.
Speak a little louder.
Perception through our senses is not full reality. Okay. We can hardly glimpse reality through just our imperfect senses.
So now we'll have some fun. We don't have more copies of this book, but we'll show you a little secret. I can't show you the secret. You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. There's something called subliminal perception. Is anybody familiar with that? When I was a kid, and I'd go to the movie theaters, there would be an intermission in which they served popcorn. I don't think that's the current standard. That's what would happen. And right before the intermission, they would flash on the screen, "Eat popcorn, eat popcorn." And they would flash it so quickly that you don't know it was flashed. But surely, when it came time for the intermission, what would you want to do? Eat popcorn. If you take a magazine, let's say a Time magazine, which I'm sure none of you have ever read. You take a Time magazine and you look for advertisements for liquor. Let's say liquor advertisements, start there. Typically, a liquor advertisement, what does it have in it? You've all seen it, yes.
Liquor?
Liquor? How?
It's like presented in like very suave way.
In what? Be more precise.
A glass.
You're right. And what else?
Or sometimes it's the close-up of the bottle, and it's made to look very sleek and elegant.
Yes. And a woman dressed up nicely. Now, that's what you see. But let me tell you what you haven't seen. If you take a magnifying glass and look in the ice cubes, and there's a whole book on this I've read, and it really works, you will find images of women's private parts, images of death, images of hangman's nooses, bodies. You'll see it. I'm not exaggerating. Anyone who likes can see this for themselves. It used to be much more prominent. Then it became well known. It's still there, but less prominent. But it used to be the ice cubes are shaped like a woman's body and a lot of death symbols, because people who drink are not in the mode of goodness. So images from tamaguna and a little bit of rajaguna would, just like flashing popcorn, want to make us drink. Yes?
What's the name of this book?
I don't remember. I read it a long time. But you just go Google subliminal perception. You'll find several books on it. And the books are clear, and they show the actual advertisements cut out of newspapers, and they're blown up. And I've taken with naked eye, even not a magnifying glass, and found that these things. It's a long time ago, but it's certainly true. If you look at the cover of the fifth canto, you'll also find a subliminal perception. Anybody know that? Death. There's stars in the background, and on the very bottom, the stars form the word death. So the BBT artist then also had a sense of humor about these things. And you'll find it, because subliminal perception's there. So that tells us something about the fifth canto, that's included there. And you knew that was there, right? That death thing? I hadn't seen it, really. If I had a copy, it's, I mean, anybody will see it. It's not like my imagination. No.
The jacket.
Yeah, it's on the jacket. And I would have brought mine, but I didn't. Thought in such a cold day like today, the book would have its jacket. Excuse me? This volume, I think. It might be the previous volume. You're right. You're right, Gopal. Actually, you may be right on that. So, there's reality and perception, and we can be influenced. This is the whole idea of Madison Avenue. I mean, Madison Avenue tries to convince us of things, that if we use a certain toothpaste and we're male, there'll be females flocking at our feet. And Prabhupada used to joke that they say that if you smoke a menthol cigarette, it's cool, but it's fire. He said, it makes no sense. Putting fire, but now I'll be cool. So it's this mental adjustment. So the fifth canto takes a little play with us this way. When the fifth canto first came out, devotees were quite, I think the word is, bewildered. It's a bewildering canto. And this verse really, it's a lot of subtleties, but we're going to take these subtleties and take it to an interesting place. So one of the subtle, Prabhupada says you really can't comprehend the universe. Even a person as perfect as Brahma can't really figure it out. Now, Prabhupada himself, in significant private discussion, sometimes public, also stated, I can't figure this out. Prabhupada said, I am not a cosmologist. That's not what I am. So, he then asked the various devotees, various disciples, when he's doing the fifth canto, find me a good Vedic cosmologist. Because you have the Jyotir Shastras, you have the Surya Siddhanta Shastras, you have the fifth canto. And all these have to be integrated in some way to come up with an understanding of what's this Vedic view. And it's very technical. So Prabhupada asked for help, for technical help. And devotees would bring, when he was in India, various so-called pundits who knew these things, but turns out none of them really knew it. And they would kind of maybe take a fee and promise to produce something which wasn't produced very well. So this fifth canto was mysterious even to Prabhupada. And to understand how that is, we turn to the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Now, in the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, we have a universal form. And Krishna showed to Arjuna something that no one had quite seen before. And it showed all the universes rushing. It showed, it's quite spectacular to read it. It's quite ferocious. You see the future of all the people dying on the battlefield. It's the 11th chapter is like a sci-fi movie. You know, it's all these odd things, and it's quite ferocious what happened. And then it's Krishna demonstrating, I am everything. It all comes from me. But in this like audio visual 3D overwhelming image. And then towards the end, after seeing it all, you know, at that point Arjuna sort of, he was friends with Krishna, he's taking Krishna seriously, but he needed a little dose of awe at that time to get the next lesson. So Krishna said, you want some awe? I'll give you some awe. Something no one has ever seen before. As we say, this was awesome. After seeing this universal form, which I've never seen before, I am gladdened. But at the same time, my mind is disturbed with fear. Therefore, please, please, bestow your grace upon me. Reveal again your form as a personality of Godhead, the four-arm form. I don't want to see this thousand-arm form anymore. Just four is enough for me, and I'd really like two. And that's what Krishna did. So, thus, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, having spoken to Arjuna, displayed his real forearm form, and at last showed his two-arm form, thus encouraging the fearful Arjuna. When Arjuna saw this form, he said, seeing this human-like form so very beautiful, I am now composed in mind, and I am restored to my original nature. This form of mine you are seeing, Krishna said, is difficult to behold. Even the demigods are seeking the opportunity to see this form, the two-armed form, which is so dear. So much could be said about this, but I wanted to get back to the fifth canto. So the fifth canto, to some degree, is like that. It is a glimpse of what the universe might look like from a very, very different perspective than sitting here. For example, if we would go outside and look at an automobile, every one of you will look at it and say, this is a car. But if there's a fly and it lands on the hood of the car, especially maybe on the engine of the car, the hood is open, it's not going to, and it sees out of some places there's flame and there's smoke coming, the engine's running and there's noises, and it's going to be quite a bewildering circumstance to it if it had a brain more than a fly's brain. Maybe what we need, there was a sci-fi movie in the 50s, and the sci-fi movie, this man ended up, he was a man, but he had the head of a fly. And the fly had the head of a man. You remember that one? The fly? It's from the 50s. Yeah, they merged together. So we need one of those creatures. This man, the little fly with the head of a man. So and they got reversed, and they got messed up. Yeah. Prabhupada used to do this too. He used to refer to movies he saw as a kid, things like King Kong and other things. He particularly liked a Charlie Chaplin movie. So, in the fifth canto, we're kind of getting a glimpse. Oh, wow, this universe is really vast. There's so much out there. It's to give us the same impression of awe that Arjuna had seeing this universal form. Give us a little awe. Give us a little respect for how great this universe is. Because we tend to get a little proud of our position. Once Lord Brahma went to see Lord Vishnu, and he knocked at the door. Gatekeeper said, "Who's there?" And Brahma said, "It is Brahma. It is Brahma. It's Brahma. Come on, dumb gatekeeper. I'm Brahma. I got four heads. I create the universe. Blah 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 blah." And then the gatekeeper goes, checks with Vishnu, comes back and says, "By the way, which Brahma?" "Well, the Brahma?" So he's invited in, and Lord Vishnu summons all the Brahmas. And there are Brahmas with 1,000 heads, 10,000 heads, 100,000 heads, our little four-headed Brahma. And all the Brahmas hit the ground at once. And imagine all these helmets hitting the ground at once, offering respect. They all couldn't see each other. Only our Brahma could see that. I remember correctly, that everyone was there. And our Brahma became, for that moment, a little humble. Because when you're Brahman, you're big shot, sometimes you got to become a little humble. So he became a little humble then. And that was quite a funny joke Vishnu performed. Calling them all, they all came. You rang Vishnu and said, yes, yes. Oh, thank you for coming. Everything fine in your universe. They each thought Vishnu was only speaking to them like Krishna and the Rasa dance. And they said, oh, everything's pretty good in our universe. Oh, thanks. You can go home now. And that was it. And our Lord Brahma is just sitting there, his head's all turning around and around in circles, I guess. Something like that. So the fifth canto is like Lord Brahma seeing this. It's like the universal form. It's bewildering. It's the purpose is to give us a glimpse. The previous canto, you're right, the death is previous volume. Because the fifth. Oh, only certain editions, yeah, you're right. But yeah, because the multi-edition might not have it. We describe like the hellish planets, the heavenly planets, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur discuss that some of this is real and some of this is allegorical, so it takes a lot of study. And Prabhupada made the point that to really understand the fifth canto will take a lot of study, and he called in pundits and all to assist. Not that some of them were little good, some of them weren't. So it's a complicated field. Yet, our own late godbrother Sataputta was able to do something remarkable with the fifth canto. So I'm going to tell you one story from the fifth canto. In other words, the fifth canto is very bewildering, yet there are amazing, amazing truths in here. Now, does anyone know what a yojana is? Yojana. What's a yojana? Yes. Okay.
Is it like 8 miles? Like a distance?
Yeah. How big is a yojana?
Is it 8 miles?
Could be. Prabhupada refers to it at one point in... fourth canto, I'm trying to remember, refers to it in one verse as 8 miles. He took that from some scholars' work. There's some say it could be 5, some say 10. Sataputta came up with a calculation of what it could be based on a longitude and latitudes of the earth and how it fits in. So something more about that, Krishna Kripa? Yeah. Yes.
One way he came up with a measurement, which is about 8.5 something. And he realized that the rings of the mandala corresponded to the geocentric orbit. So that number that made that not most perfect, that was also about 8.5. So he concluded it was around 8.5.
Yeah, and that's what I remember. So, now, we'll get into some cosmology. You have to picture this in your mind. I'm actually looking for some pictures of this, but I couldn't find what I wanted, so we'll do it in the mind. Now, there are these islands like Dwipas, discussed in the fifth canto. Anybody know what a dwipa is?
It's an island.
Island. An island. Like Great Britain's an island. Now, what if I had to tell you the earth was an island? What would you say? There is still a society that exists today in England called the Flat Earth Society. And they say the earth is flat. And they believe it. And if you want, you can Google it and go to Flat Earth Society and they'll give you their evidences. They really still exist. But in England, you get all kinds of weird groups, so why shouldn't they exist too? But when you read the fifth canto, some people would come to the conclusion that the earth is flat. Now, otherwhere is placed in the Bhagavatam. The earth is described as a globe, and many of us have flown to India, so a little hard to stomach an entirely flat earth in that trip. We know a horizon. We see over it. You can do all kinds of geometry and measure distance. But when we're talking here, we're talking about the Earth being an island. So how does that reconcile? Yes.
Is that described as a globe in Bhagavatam?
Yes. Okay. There's a verse there. I don't recall it, but I could look it up. Yes.
Does it have to do with Bhumandala?
Well, yes, but how?
Bhumandala
is Earth, and it's an island.
Right, it's like a flat surface on below the Earth.
No, Bhumandala, the Earth, is flat, according to this.
I wasn't familiar with Bhumandala being the Earth. I thought it was a flat plane under the Earth.
No, see, Earth. But I'm going to show you. We have a little scientific experiment to show you. And when I'm done, all of you will want to be members of the Flat Earth Society because they did make a good point. And I'll show you. It's really simple. Now, this was Sariputta's brilliance, what he did. Then I'll conclude with Professor Pingree, he's passed on now, but an interesting character. Krishna Kripa knows Professor Pingree, or of him. Yeah. Oh. Help me out, Krishna Kripa.
After resize it, but there's a picture showing the four different names he saw in the
See if you find it for me. Yeah, see if you find it. See if you find it for me. So meanwhile, we'll do... Now, the first thing is, there it's not flat. Okay. But the universe... The universe is flat. The solar system is flat. It really is. All the planets are in a plane. You've seen pictures, I'm sure, in grade school. The planets are in a plane. They don't have to be. Why can't Venus rotate like this and Mars rotate like that? But they don't. They don't. They're all in an extremely flat plane. Little wiggle, wobble, but extremely flat. And the asteroids and everything else, it's all in a flat plane. Now, for an experiment. This works better with sparklers, not incense. But it's not 4th of July, so I didn't have it. So, this is a point. Now, if I go fast enough, what does it start looking like? It might not work real well. It looks like a continual circle of fire. A continual circle. It's not a point anymore. Jaya Prabhupada. Now, one more fact to put in, then I'll tie this together. If, what moves around what? Does the Earth move around the Sun, or does the Sun move around the Earth? Yes.
Well, from what I understand from modern scientific viewpoint and the Vedic viewpoint, that's debatable. Don't the Vedas say that the...
I'm not interested in what the Vedas say, just what happens out in the world. Forget about what the Vedas say.
Okay,
Prabhupada would say that. He said, forget Shastra, I just want science now.
The planets orbit the sun.
They do. Anybody disagree? Yes.
Well, the sun is rotating around the solar system in a chariot, as far as I know.
Forget Shastra now.
Sure.
Just
yeah, I know.
What goes on in the world?
I mean, I think it's like there's more than one. Like, it's not just as simple as everything's rotating around the sun. It's like...
Oh, the sun's rotating too, but put that
aside.
Yeah. But I'm talking about the relationship between our Earth here and the sun. Is the sun rotating around us, or are we rotating around the sun?
We're rotating around
Well, the sun is rotating around us, and we're rotating around something else. So it's
But what about us and the sun? Just that?
Those two. The sun would be rotating around us.
The sun's rotating around us. We're not rotating around the sun. Okay.
I mean, I might be wrong. I don't know. It's kind of confusing.
Ancient. Okay. Yes? Well, it looks a little differently. And this will take us to Etch-a-Sketch. Has anybody ever here played with an Etch-a-Sketch? Okay. Now we'll tie this in. Now, actually, it doesn't make a difference if the Earth is rotating around the sun or the sun around the Earth. It depends on what your vantage point is. If you're sitting on the Earth, which I think all of us happen to be today, we can look at, and we're looking at the stars at night and the sun during the day, and we look at it, we're at the point of view is, what does it look like from sitting here? It looks like everything's rotating around us because we're the central point. And this is just spatial geometry. When you're, has anybody ever here had this phenomenon? They're sitting on a train in a train station, and the train next to them starts to move. And you don't know which train is moving. Is it my train or the train next to mine? You don't know for a moment. And that hit Einstein when he was on the train, and he came up with the theory of relativity. Because it hit him. Certain things are relative. So similarly, it's all relative. We can pick Venus. We can pick an asteroid, the moon. We pick an arbitrary point. And from that point, we can imagine what it would look like if that point wasn't moving. Because everything's moving in relation to everything else. So it doesn't make a point which arbitrary point you pick. Now, if I got in this spaceship and went up over the solar system and looked down at it, the sun's in the center. And the simplest system is to say the planets are going around in concentric orbits. That's the simplest system to say. So, the planets rotating around the sun makes sense. But if I'm sitting on Earth, or I happen to be sitting on Venus or Mars, from that point of view, the stars I see at night and everything I see, it's as if I'm the stationary point and everything else is moving. So some of the Bhagavatam is taking it from that point of view. If I'm on Venus, this is what it looks like. If I'm on Mars, this is what it looks like. It's taking it from these different points of view. Now we get to the Etch-a-Sketch. If you play with an Etch-a-Sketch, and you can do this thing where you do concentric circles from, and it goes in little whirls like this. So if I am sitting, do you have a picture of that?
Well, it's that one in the right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a little hard to see. Okay. If we're sitting on the Earth, and we want to look at what the Mars orbit looks like, it's not going to look like a circle around us. It's going to look like circles like this. And because we're doing it Earth-centric. If we look from the sun, there'll be much simpler circles. But if we look from other points of view, it looks a little different. And it comes into concentric circles like that, which is the kind of thing, if you have an Etch-a-Sketch, you can make all these little fun designs. It used to be a toy called a spirograph. And it was an Etch-a-Sketch and a spirograph. And you combine them together, and you can make all these little circles. So if anyone wants to understand this a little better, go buy a spirograph toy. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And same thing, you can do this with a compass and a pencil, and you'll end up with this diagram where, so that's from the Earth's point of view, the planets have these orbits that are not smooth, but they look and they cover an area. Well, now we're going to get amazing. The area these planets cover happens to be flat because the solar system is flat. And the area it covers, like that stick of incense, it covers a circle. And the area it covers happens to be
equal, if you use the word yojanas, to a certain amount of miles. And those miles tell us how big these islands are. And the islands in the fifth canto turn out to be the islands that the planets would trace from an earth-centric point of view, what the size of these islands are, and if you then look, then you can take these, and yojanas we know is, let's say, roughly 8 miles, and it tells how big these islands are, which makes no sense to most people reading this in the fifth canto. But if you know how big these islands are, guess what you can conclude? How far Mars is from Venus. And you can get it within, what's the number, 3%? It's about 3%. So you could take the fifth canto language and says, this is the orbit of the planets in yojanas. And then you got to realize, hey, they're from Earth-centric point of view, not sun-centric. And then, this is high school math, by the way. Then you can take this high school math and say that the Earth, from an Earth center point of view, these are what the size of the islands would be in yojanas as traced out. And these yojanas actually correspond within 3% of the actual distance that the planets are from each other. Now, why is this remarkable? Because that was not known in modern science until 150 years ago. It wasn't known. The telescopes weren't good enough to do the geometry to figure that out. It just was unknown. Now we know things like the sun is 93 million miles and Venus is so many miles it varies in the orbit. But you know, we know this, yes.
But the distances that they measure are all relative. They're not actually like exact distances.
These are exact distances.
Like you have to measure it. Like you can measure... Like one, like as far as I'm like understanding it, you can measure one point in space, and then to find out how far another point is, you have to measure it relative to that point.
Well, this is sitting on Earth.
Right. So it's like not the actual distance. Like it's just like a relative distance.
It's the actual distance. It really is.
Like we can't like take a ruler and measure it literally.
Sure,
that's what
could.
I'm saying.
Sure you could. It'd have to be a very big ruler, 93
million
miles.
Well, like
that's
what I'm saying. That would be
but
an actual
if
distance.
If you had a big ruler, it would be the actual... No, these are actual distances. We can talk about it later, and I can explain it to you. But they're real. So here's a remarkable thing. So Sariputta wrote a paper on this, and a graduate student presented it to Professor Pingree, who is a top Vedic cosmologist at, I think, Brown University. And Professor Pingree's read the abstract and said, rubbish, I will not read such a paper. Because he could not believe that extracted from the fifth canto. Now, the various scholars will debate how old the fifth canto is. But no one thinks it's less than 150 years old. Some will say it's 1,000. Some say 2,000, maybe 5,000. So scholars will have their different numbers. But no one says 150. No one says that at all. And there was no way to calculate that distance until 150 years ago. So that someone could take verses from the fifth canto and precisely and accurately, within, you know, a small margin of error, calculate how far Mars is from Venus, Earth is from Uranus, was just impossible. And he said, I won't even read such a paper. But the math I'm talking about, it's in Sariputta's book, Vedic Cosmology. And any of you who have done reasonably well in high school geometry can duplicate the math yourself. So is that a reasonable statement, Krishna Kripa?
Yeah.
I mean, he did it on the computer, but you could. But the math is simple. You don't need a computer even to do it. So the point I'm trying to make on the fifth canto, it's quite mysterious. It's intended to be mysterious. It's intended to be that point of view, sort of like, okay, come on, it's all amazing out there. Make us a little humble. That's part of what the fifth canto is trying to do. Give us a little humility, literally for God's sake. And then Sariputta then, and Prabhupada challenged us to do it, but he said there are tidbits in here that are so amazing that give us some belief that even though I probably won't understand most of what's in here, there are things in here that are truly amazing, and that Sariputta can take, I think it was 2 or 3 verses, and tell me how far Mars is from Venus. It is just a remarkable event. And there's probably many, many more remarkable things that in the fifth canto that will come out in the future. But the purpose of the fifth canto is to awe us. So if you read the fifth canto with that in mind, say, wow, a lot I don't understand. Because it's trying to make the point, and Prabhupada makes it in this very purport, that unless we're materially perfect, we can't understand everything. So in order for us to be convinced we can't understand everything, we're given stuff that makes my head go in circles. But Sariputta's head did not go in complete circles. He actually extracted something remarkable from it. I don't know if we have that book in the library upstairs. We do. Okay. So I thought I'd give you a little introduction to the bewildering fifth canto, give us a little sense of humility, and give us a lesson in rotating incense. We'll stop at this point and see if there are any questions. Yes?
I just wanted to make a comment. I saw a video on YouTube by, I think it's Thompson, and he explains a lot of this too.
That's Sariputta. That's who I'm talking about.
Oh, okay. So
Dr. Richard Thompson.
I was thinking there was multiple devotees who did this, but that's cool.
No. That's exactly Dr. Richard Thompson. He lived in Gainesville. He was actually my best friend for decades, and he passed on about 6 years ago. Unfortunately, and not that old, but it was he drowned. It was just an unusual circumstance. Yeah, it's unfortunate. Sometimes that happens. Krishna needs great minds elsewhere, and that's where they go. So he's written this whole series. No, but you have it right. Any other questions on this? Yes.
I've heard before sometimes that it's not a good idea to try and compare the Vedic view with like modern science because, as far as I understand, there's many points that are different. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Yes, I do. I do. Actually, it can be quite useful if you're very well adept at Puranic ways and you're very well adept at modern science. If you're not, it can be a disaster. You have to, it's only for specialists to really understand it. I mean, it's not casual. This is deep stuff. And even Prabhupada was asking for help with it, to give an idea. So, and the crossovers like this are amazing. And if we study in the ancient world, I mean, we'll find so many amazing architectures and calculations and how if you go to Angkor Wat, you know Angkor Wat? It's the largest temple complex in the world. It's a Vishnu temple in Cambodia. And you go to Angkor Wat, and you go on December 21st. Why is that a significant day? Yes. Winter solstice. On that day and that day only, a light beam goes through a window, and that window lights up a bas relief of Bhishma dying on a bed of arrows, which is the day he passed on. And on that day only. And you can talk to Vasudha Narayanan, the only professor emeritus at University of Florida in humanities, and she will tell you about her visit there watching that. Okay? So all I'm saying is it takes a lot of pretty advanced mathematics and a lot of good geometry to do these designs. They're not so simple. And these were pre-computers. So there's a lot of ancient talents, and the pyramids are all line up with certain astronomical phenomena. We don't even know what they were doing, let alone Stonehenge. So there's a lot of things out there all over the world that are kind of mysterious. With Sariputta's book, Mysteries of the Sacred Universe. So there's a lot of mysteries. It's a lot of interesting things to study. But if we look at it casually, like most things, it'll be bewildering. And the intention of the fifth canto, by the way, is to bewilder you. So that fits in very well. It was, just like the intention of the universal form was to bewilder Arjuna. Do you want to add anything to all of this, Krishna Kripa? You know so much more than I do about this.
Okay. So one reason why he was able to find these correlations between the Bhagavatam cosmology and the modern cosmology was he wasn't afraid to look. Everybody else thought it was like impossible, you know, it was like too bewildering, but Sadhubuddha actually applied his abilities and found like four different ways you can look at the Bhagavatam and make sense out of it. So that was, we can learn from that, you know. let's see what else can be said.
And Krishna Kripa was Sadhubuddha's right-hand research assistant for 10, 20 years.
I did the the typesetting and the some of the video production for all the books. So I read this book like 3 times, but not recently. let's see, what else comes to mind? This is a diagram of what you're saying about the flatness of the solar system and the flatness of Bhumandala from the book.
Yeah. And if we look at the orbits of the planets from the sun point of view, it's like this. But from the Earth's point of view, it looks like this, and it traces out a circumference, and that circumference happens to be the circumference of the islands of the planets. So when they say island, the planet's an island. The island is the orbit the planet traces out. From an Earth-centric point of view, what it would look like. And just like when that incense was moving fast, it didn't look like a point, it looked like a circle. So similarly, if we trace out the orbit of the planets, it creates this circle, this circumference, and we know how many yojanas that is, and we know how big the island is, and that's how far apart the planets are. I mean, some of this math may not hit.
One of Prabhupada's controversial statements is that the sun is closer than the moon.
Yeah.
Could you explain that, please? And he gave the example, in every culture of the world, it goes Sunday, Monday.
Well, one of Prabhupada's intimate assistants said to him after he gave that lecture privately, Prabhupada, not sure it really works that way. And Prabhupada said, well, it makes the point. Prabhupada wasn't so concerned about that detail from one angle. And so on the other side, Prabhupada was trying to make a point that there are different ways to look at things. And in fact, if we look at it, it turns out the moon is not in the plane of the planets. It rotates. So from a certain point of view, if you're looking at it from a plane point of view, then we end up with the moon actually being further away from the, because it steps out of the plane. So there is a way mathematically look at that, says, oh yeah, it's not in the plane.
An example of the skyscraper.
What was that example?
New York City.
Yeah. Quite a big city. Yeah. And you are looking for somebody.
Oh yeah.
You're looking for two people, let's say. And one person is two blocks away. And the other person's in a building right next to you, but three blocks up.
Yeah, the person in the skyscraper, if I'm at the foot of the Empire State Building and somebody is at Penn Station, who's closer to me? Somebody who's, I'm standing in front of the building on top of the Empire State Building or someone at Penn Station? And, well, in a flat plane point of view, the person in the building might only be 100 yards away. But in a three-dimensional view, the person in Penn Station, person in Penn Station, in the three-dimensional view, that person's much further away. So the Sunday, Monday probably has to do with looking at it two and three-dimensional ways. So different ways to look at it. So Prabhupada was just challenging, there are different ways to look at it, don't be so close-minded. And the fifth canto, the purpose of the fifth canto is to open up our minds to see, wow, there's a lot out there. And the amazing part is you can take little pieces like these verses of Yojanas and extract remarkable information, but that requires intense brain work. For the rest of us, we can just be awesome. So we'll stop here. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.